Happy Child Life Month. Did you know that March is the celebration of child life specialists? This episode emphasizes the importance of community, ongoing learning, and the advocacy within child life. Welcome to WonderCast, a community collaborative podcast supporting families navigating the complexities of chronic illness or injury. WonderCast is supported by the generous sponsorship of Texas Oncology. Texas Oncology, more breakthroughs, more victories, experts in cancer care. Ever felt overwhelmed by a loved one's illness or injury? You are not alone. In this post, we explore the pivotal role of child life specialists through the insights shared by Becca Schutz, a seasoned professional in the field. As families grapple with illness or injury, understanding the important support available can significantly ease their journey. This discussion sheds light on the unique competencies of child life specialists and why their services are vital for both children and their parents. Meet Becca.
Hi, Julie. My name is Becca. I am a child life specialist in the Atlanta community. I have a husband and I desperately wish I had a dog. I love to go running and I cannot wait for this awesome weather to start.
You're so close. That winter is going to melt away very soon and we're almost to spring. Happy Child Life Month to you.
Oh, thank you so much. Happy Child Life Month to you too.
Thank you. We're right here in the middle of it and it's exciting to be able to visit today on our podcast with a child life specialist to share with our professional listening community a little bit about the roles that you carry for Wonders and Worries for your private practice in the healthcare setting. And then also for our listeners that might be navigating illness or injury that may not understand the roles of child life in the work that we do versus more of the typical pediatric setting that you see. I'm glad that we kind of have you as our little bridge to kind of help explain how that is a little bit different on both sides.
Well, thank you. It's an honor.
So I think what I'll do is if you're comfortable, I'm going to have you start by sharing a little bit about your journey as a child life specialist to give a little bit of background on the different places you've been and kind of what your impact there has looked like.
Certainly. I've been fortunate to have a career essentially in Georgia for the most part. So I did practicum at the hospital in Savannah. I did my child life internships at one at a nonprofit organization called Camp Sunshine, and then my hospital-based internship was at Children's Healthcare of Atlanta, now Arthur M. Blank. I worked at CHOA for about 10 years and was fortunate enough to be a part of the leadership team while I was there, and then eventually just decided that I was looking for a change and have joined the Emory Proton Therapy Center. As time went on throughout all of this, I continued to see that there is need in the community, that a child life specialist would make a huge impact, and that there was a hole and a specialization that was really missing. So I'd have friends and family reaching out, asking for support. I'd also have patients at Emory or Children's Health here of Atlanta reaching out, can you continue to provide services, which we know we're not allowed to do necessarily in that situation. But I just saw that there was a huge need. And so ultimately decided to create a child life private practice. And I serve children and adults in North Atlanta and the Atlanta community. And it's been a wonderful experience. Atlanta has welcomed this service with open arms. And the work now that I'm able to do with Wonders and Worries really opens up a lot of opportunities for families too. So we know for a fact that children benefit from working with a child life specialist. And not everyone has access because not all adult hospitals have child life specialists. And many people don't necessarily know what a child life specialist is. So Wonders and Worries is making this service more prevalent and really putting it at the forefront of more healthcare employees' minds. And so these adults that are going through these really difficult illnesses or injuries are now having the opportunity to have support for their child, which is oftentimes a huge stressor for adults. I think it's 70% of adults diagnosed with an illness or injury are oftentimes wondering what they're going to do for their child. And we have a solution for that. There's this awesome career that is there to support you completely. And Wonders and Worries is making sure that everyone has access to it. At this facility, I serve not only children, but also adult patients that have children that are looking for advice and support through that process.
So you are a part of our registered provider program through Wonders and Worries. Do you want to take a quick minute and just share a little bit about that programming?
Yes, I'd love to. The Registered Wonders and Worries program is essentially this training, and this training is backed by evidence, and all the services that we provide through this curriculum have been proven through research that they positively impact children and their families. So as a registered Wonders and Worries provider, after I completed my training, I was then able to go out into our community and start supporting the needs of adults who have children that really needed support. So it can be a gamut of different things. Maybe it's that the child doesn't necessarily know what's going on health-wise for their mom or their dad or their grandparent. So if we're providing developmentally appropriate education with hands-on teaching tools, we then move on to assess if they're retaining that information and how we can reinforce that information. Because we know that when children understand what's going on, they are more likely to cope easier and better and more positively with that experience, and then ultimately have more mastery over it too. They can then begin integrating it into their life a little easier. They have less misconceptions about what's happening and possibly blaming themselves less and less. So the developmentally appropriate education is a huge aspect. And then there's other elements too, where we're helping children process, what does this illness or injury that my parent is going through, how is it impacting me? And how can I process that information? And how does it fit into my life? And we then help the child build coping skills to support their emotional needs throughout the process. There's also opportunity to see what the healthcare setting looks like, maybe that their parent goes to be more a part of any medical type tasks that are happening at home. We try to address the full range of what a child needs and what a child is going through. So that way, once they move on with us and essentially graduate from our program, they're better equipped and they're coping positively. And they have all these different skills that they no longer need us anymore because they are prepared to move on and flourish.
Absolutely. And I love specifically with you because now Atlanta has become our first sponsored city outside of Texas, which means that now, Becca, you are able to meet with Wonders and Worries families 2 to 18 in person in Atlanta to be able to help provide that support to them in a way that's maybe more hands-on with the younger population and giving them that developmental need for tactile response and play and really being that community local support for that family.
Benefits of what I love that we are able to provide here in Atlanta now is this in-person, face-to-face interactions that I think sometimes children are really looking for, especially that younger age group. So I think the children that are unable to really engage and go to a therapeutic place virtually, we're now able to meet with them in person. I also see this makes a really big positive impact for some of our kids that may possibly be on the spectrum or have ADHD. They're able to pay attention a little bit easier when we're face to face. And then we can also use these different tools that are fun, like you were talking about before, the tactile pieces, and really hone in on what a child sees as their strengths and use that in the sessions to make them match perfectly to what they have going on. We're not just limited to the virtual piece. So I think it's opened a lot of doors for the families in the Atlanta community. And that's the goal, right?
Absolutely. Because of your three roles that you're kind of juggling right now, you've got your inpatient support outpatient support at the Proton Center. That's for adults and pediatric patients.
Yes.
And typically more of a traditional child life role where you're doing lots of procedural prep. Am I right in assuming that it's? Yes. Okay. So more of that typical what you would see in an in-house child life pediatric environment.
Yes.
And then you have your private practice, which I'll let you share about here in a moment. And then you also have these Wonders and Worries families that you are supporting and contracting with to be able to provide support to as well.
Yes.
So you're kind of straddling this world of pediatrics where I think that our professionals that might be listening to the podcast kind of think of as more traditional child life. But then there's this whole other population that you're serving. Mm-hmm. What similarities do you see between those two and what differences do you see?
That's a good question. The piece that never changes is the heart of child life, right? The developmentally appropriate education, the coping tools, the therapeutic outlets, the expertise that child life specialists have in development that guides our decision making and helps us parent coach, all these different pieces, that never changes. It's just the setting that we're in. And just like when you're working in different units in the hospital, you really specialize. When you are in the hospital, a lot of times it can feel very acute, even if you're in a long-term unit. A lot of my experience was in the bone marrow transplant unit, but that didn't change the fact that you have a certain period of time to do developmentally appropriate education about BMT and cancer, and then you're moving on to the next. And now we're in a procedure, and you might be walking in and having to teach coping skills in real time while painful stimulus is going on. It feels very acute instead of the private practice side or the wonders and worries side. The private practice side or the community-based child life services, the cadence slows down a little bit. So you have a little bit more time to practice coping skills and to see if they've stuck. You have time to help a child process what it looks like in their life and how is that going to fit in. And there's just a little bit more time. The cadence is different, but the skills are truly the same. And then with this piece of wonders and worries, we're just meeting more families and you guys are filling a gap, or we are filling a gap that is really there in the community, and it's making a huge difference, and all families deserve this support. And I just appreciate so much that you guys are the ones that are helping make sure that that happens.
What we'll do with this podcast is we will also link information about our registered Wonders and Worries provider program, so that if you are a licensed clinical professional, or you are maybe a recreational therapist or a play therapist or a child life specialist, and you are interested in learning more about this programming, we absolutely want to be able to give you the information about it. So feel free to reach out through the podcast, or you can also just click the links that we're going to link in our bio, and you can get some information about this program as well. So Becca, with students, and I kind of want to take a minute because I know that we do have a lot of child life students and medical health professional students, social work, nurse navigators, chaplains that do listen into this podcast. What have you found that some of the stressors look like for some of, we'll take child life since that's our month and that's what we're talking about. For some of these child life students and young grads that are coming into the field, what kind of unique stressors are you seeing with them? And do you have any advice for anyone considering a profession in child life?
Yeah, definitely. I think there's a couple of different things that come to my mind when thinking about some of the stressors or issues or ways to grow yourself come up in my mind related to students or new grads. And part of that, I feel like we can't help but talk about, is how difficult it is to get a child life internship. Our field is so specialized and it's so unique. And so there's always going to be more applicants than there are internship positions available. And that's really challenging and stressful. And I think it's important to remember that that's a part of child life. And we've all felt that way at some point. I think that a huge piece that sometimes people miss is that you can have a mentor, and a lot of child life specialists want to do that. So trying to find a child life specialist that would be willing to meet with you regularly, you're going to get exposure to a lot more of the child life jargon, and you can talk about case studies and different things like that. And then when you're applying for your internships and interviewing, you just really sound like you know more because you do. And so having a mentor, reaching out to them regularly, can be a huge hack. And I feel that a lot of the women that I've mentored over the years, and there's been a lot of women that have mentored me as well, but as far as student professional relationship, it's made a huge positive impact. They say that it's much easier to answer internship questions because we've been discussing these things for, say, the last year or the last 2 years. So I highly recommend having a mentor.
I love that. I think back to just my, what, now we're 23 years as a child life specialist. And I just think back to like these incredible men and women, child life specialist mentors that I've had, and just the way that they still, as adults today, even some of them are no longer in the field and they've moved into private practice, or maybe one of them went on to become a PA or a nurse, or, but wherever they are in their journey, the way that they have helped shape me as a professional has been huge.
Another thing for young professionals and students as well is that you're very excited to do this work and you get thrown in, and sometimes you don't really recognize the emotional toll that this job has. And we always talk about self-care and how do you cope with what you're going through, but no one necessarily teaches you to do that or when to do that, or you might not necessarily know what works for you unless you've faced some really challenging things in your life before this point. And even still, it can be a little different because now you're in a professional setting. And so I think trying to have self-awareness and trying to process what you are experiencing before it gets to be a place where it's too late and it's coming out and you can't help it anyways. So whether that's just going ahead and start trying coping skills and see what hits, or do something that you think will work and see if it makes a difference for you. Don't wait until it's too late. Don't try to continue to compartmentalize until now you're crying every day at work. That's, we just don't want it to go that long, right? Having an awareness that you can't just laugh it away. Not that we're laughing about anything, but you can't just pretend that it's not happening, essentially. I think we try to act very tough and we try to say that we're immune to it and that we can handle anything, and we can handle a lot. But I do think that we need to use coping skills and we do need to process what's going on, because you will fall in love with these families and there's a lot of heartache, and it's okay to honor that process too. So taking care of yourself is the next thing I wanted to talk about. And then last is that, kind of along that same vein, is there will be hard days in healthcare. That's a given. And so trying to think through your why and kind of giving yourself this sentence or this phrase or just this one word of your why, of why you do this work. And so on those hard days, you can reflect back to that of your reasoning, and it'll kind of help you get through some of those harder days.
And I think also we'd be remiss if we didn't say, join the Association of Child Life Professionals. We have this certifying committee, this council that is specifically creating tools for students. I know that they have a different rate for students. I know that they have different networking groups for students. And so really kind of plugging in there too. I know conference is so expensive, but looking to see if there is a conference that's maybe more local to your area that is for child life professionals, that's more area-based, or maybe the national conference is in your hometown. If you live in Chicago this year, ACLP is happening in Chicago. And so it's not too late to sign up for that as well. So really just using that, because I know that they do have breakout sessions that are specific for students or people that are trying to obtain an internship. And I love that.
It's a great idea. I think that's very smart. I'm with you.
Okay. So being a child life specialist for so many years, this kind of does go hand in hand with, you were talking with self-care. I'm going to kind of skip around for a hot minute. What have you found to be really helpful in avoiding burnout in the profession?
I love this question, because our field does have a high burnout, and I think that we need to be discussing this more. And I also think that we need to be more honest about it too. So I would not be truthful if I didn't say that I have certainly burned out at times in this field.
Same.
Right?
Same. Yes.
It's very hard not to.
Yes.
By getting to a place of burnout, I think then I was able to realize, oh, wait, I have to learn to take care of myself. There is no other choice. And that helped me to develop a lot of this coping skills that I use today. I think it's also important to recognize too that sometimes the system can't support us fully in the way that it needs to, and burnout might be inevitable. And I think that it's unfair not to recognize that too. Sometimes the demands are too great than what we have capacity to offer, and you can do everything right. And I say that with quotations, everything right. Use every coping skill, set boundaries, take the time that you need, be totally engaged, and sometimes burnout's still going to happen. Although that doesn't mean that we can't do things to try to help ourselves not get to that place. First and foremost, the relationships that I have with the other child life specialists that I shared an office with for over a decade were a huge reason of why I got through so many of my hard days. And so trying to really lean into the relationships that you have with people that actually understand the work that you're doing is super important. It can be easy to go to a competitive place or a frustrated place with those around you, but trying to think of yourselves as more of a family. I mean, they get this part of your life more than anyone else does. And the girls that are in that office are still some of my best friends to this day. And I don't have to even say anything. They know what I mean. And I can crack a little joke with them, and it's even funnier because they understand, right? A shared burden is what I like to call it. So I think the relationships that you have are huge in the hospital.
Agreed. And I think that that network of support can continue throughout your entire life. I laugh that I used to have a job share who was a child life specialist. Shout out to Courtney Wheelett. And I love her dearly, but then she and her family were so rude and moved to Poland to go become expats and work for her husband's company. And at the time, I was working the night shift in the ER.
Oh, wow.
But the reason why it was so great for me is when I got off at 3 or 4 in the morning, it was 8 in the morning for her in Poland. And so thanks to WhatsApp, I was able to call her on my drive home, and I could even debrief in a way that, like, as a professional, I specifically chose a career that dealt with very hard things. My spouse did not. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes I found that he can't be my debrief person because that's not fair to his well-being. Mm-hmm. But to my colleague in JobShare, who also chose the same profession and calling, mm-hmm. having that like HIPAA-approved debriefing mm-hmm. was very important for my well-being because it allowed me to still feel like I had that outlet for somebody who gets it. I think that's what you also reference with the friends that you have right now. Obviously, you're not all sharing an office space anymore. You've moved, they've moved on, but that network of support that you've built still is there.
Certainly. And that's huge. I mean, having someone that you can talk to helps you process your own feelings. We know through the work that we do, but sometimes it's hard for us to believe it ourselves, that compartmentalizing only lasts for so long. And so we need to be able to process sometimes in real time, sometimes a week later, sometimes a month later. And having those people in your life just makes such a huge difference. There's a couple other things that I want to mention too, if that's okay.
Yeah. Oh, please do. Yes.
Exercise has had a tremendous impact on my overall coping. And I know that everyone says that, but truly trying it can make a huge difference. It's just, I can't put into words exactly how big of an impact that has had. And I feel like if I would have only known being intentional about moving my body when there's so much stress in your body that you've been holding on to all day, it just has a huge impact. And so I highly recommend trying it, which sometimes feels like the last thing you want to do when you've had a hard day, but I swear to you, it'll make a difference.
Absolutely.
Absolutely right. And then the last piece I want to share, and I hope this isn't getting too vulnerable, but there was a certain time where I was working in the hospital and I kept dreaming about my patients and they weren't positive dreams. And so I felt like I was never escaping it and I was never having a break. And I was constantly worrying about these kids and these families that I was working with. And I've had other childlife specialists tell me that they felt the same thing. So that's the reason why I want to bring this up. I started using meditation. And the bad dreams completely stopped. So a way of regulating your nervous system, right? And calming your body. And clearly I was not processing some of the things that were going on and my body was holding on to them. And meditation just made a huge difference. So I hope it's okay that I say a brand of meditation.
Please do. Yeah. Well, maybe they'll sponsor us.
Okay. Okay, great. I started using the Headspace app and doing a meditation every night, and I no longer have had bad dreams in years related to my patients or anything like that. And so hoping somebody else will hear this and it'll make a big difference for them too.
Awesome. And maybe I'll reach out to them and see if they can give us a promo code.
Love it.
And Headspace app, support your local child life specialists and give them a discount code.
Exactly.
Also, I think that it's really important to discuss, especially for those that may not be as knowledgeable about the child life profession, child life can look very different across the world. So, for example, when I did my internship, I did it at Cook Children's Medical Center in Fort Worth, Texas, which was a dream. And my favorite rotation that I did was with their emergency department. And their emergency department is what truly shaped my profession as a child life specialist.
Wow.
It was a 6-team child life specialist, a 24-hour coverage.
Wow. That's huge.
Which was phenomenal. But their team specifically was so embedded in the culture of the emergency department. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't child life and the emergency department. It was the emergency department. Mm-hmm. It allowed them to build these relationships with LAC technicians and physicians and nurses and social work team and chaplains at a very deep and wholesome way where you share this vulnerable space together. But then later in my career, when I was at Dell Children's Medical Center, I worked in the ER. And unfortunately, we lost our 24-hour coverage due to funding. We had it, but we lost it. But I worked the 3 p to 3 a.m. shift.
Man.
So really, my colleagues in the child life field, they were only with me at most for 2 hours on a shift.
Whew.
And then the rest of my shift was just my emergency department team. And then I would be on call for the rest of the hospital. So the ICU units and the NICU and our other teams. So that meant that really my community was our emergency department team, ICU charge nurse, my favorite neonatologist who would be on call at nights. So really, those were the relationships that we built. So your network of support does not have to be limited to child life. So if you're listening in and you're looking at a program where you are the only one or maybe you're thinking of starting your own private practice and you're going out and you're thinking, oh, I'm going to be alone. You're not. Your community is what you make it. And I feel like that's what Becca's trying to say. That's what all my years have taught me is you just need to find somebody in your community, hopefully in your work community, that can carry that experience with you or work alongside you. And I think that makes all the difference with burnout as well.
Absolutely. I currently now work in a one-person program alongside my coping solutions work. And there's another tele specialist, right? And that's okay. I have the social workers. I have an awesome pediatric medical director. I have a nurse navigator. And it kind of almost is a tighter group too, just like your experience in the ER, right? It bonds you and brings you closer together. And so I agree with you, Julie. It doesn't have to be child life specialists. We're all kind of in the trenches together.
Absolutely. Okay. I do have a question I just thought of.
Okay.
I think it might be important for us to visit about what is something that we would want other professionals that we work alongside to maybe know about our field, maybe something that is a challenge that they may not be aware of.
Okay.
For example, for me, working at Wonders and Worries was a no-brainer for me because it was founded by two child life specialists. So it is truly a company that was designed for what I do professionally. I would say my greatest love in the hospital world was working for families and supporting these patients through these really hard seasons in their life and the incredible colleagues I got to work with. Probably my biggest thorn in my rose of that whole experience was having to advocate for my place at the table amongst my colleagues.
Mm-hmm.
And my team in the ER, oh, they 100% got it. They valued us. They knew what we did. They made appropriate referrals. Like, absolutely. But just going into a space where maybe they don't know what child life specialists do, or maybe they don't know that we're more than just bringing toys or bringing, you know, rewards for a successful IV poke or whatever, that's really not our scope of care. We love to bring play in where we can, and we want to give all the comfort items, of course. But like where my biggest burnout came from was not these really hard cases.
Mm-hmm.
It was from the lack of support at a leadership level of understanding the value of what we did. And I would guess that for a lot of child life specialists that have taken child life outside of the hospital walls,
yeah,
aside from seeing the community need, which is very big,
mm-hmm,
I think another incentive was they got to step away from that advocacy of justifying why they're even there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know that I could ever leave Wonders and Worries now because I have had to, for the past 11 years, not deal with advocacy. The thought of having to go back and justify why I need to be paid, why I would like to be paid more, why I need to be consulted before a procedure starts, why I need to take the time with the family to prepare them for this procedure. Other professionals that are listening in, I hope that they know how much we value them as team members. And my hope also is that by listening in, they come to maybe know and value child life specialists in a way that they did not before.
Yes, I laugh because you're so right. Yes, I completely agree with you. And that resonates with me. Absolutely. I think something that I've heard, and so maybe this is not the feeling from everyone, but I've heard from other professionals in the hospital, oh, I don't know if that's going to work, or kind of doubting things that we know to be almost fact. We're using development to make these decisions, or I'm doing X, Y, and Z because of this reason. This is evidence-based practice. We're not just making this stuff up to see what feels right. There's research to prove what we're doing, and please trust us because that's what we've studied and that's what we're here for and what we know. And we're also constantly assessing, okay, this one particular way of helping support a child didn't go 100%, but now I know exactly where I need to go after this. And we can also assess that these little incremental changes that are happening in coping will then amount to, this child's going to do great with their port access every time. I wish you would have believed me from the beginning. We're not just making these things up.
Mm-hmm.
Give us a chance, right?
Yes. And I used to say, if it looks like I'm just doing play with a child, then it means that I am having a very successful intervention that has been thoroughly vetted, thoroughly researched, backed in evidence, and it looks like child's play because it means it's going well.
Yes.
But if this child is freaking out or
mm-hmm,
not wanting to hold still, it's not going poorly per se, but it's just that, okay, this method did not work for this child. Let's use our other tools that we've been trained in.
Right.
So just the opportunity to let us use our expertise. I promise always that I will never tell a nurse or a physician where to place an IV. That is outside of my scope, but maybe a comfort position that might work for this family.
Yes.
Or a tool or a way of approaching new information sharing.
Mm-hmm.
Let's work together, because in that moment, there's a lot that can be shared.
I agree. And I like what you said about, if it appears to you that we're just playing, then it's going correctly. That's what we want. We want children to feel that they're in this zone where it feels right and it feels comfortable, because we are helping them to overcome a situation that was hard for them, or we're helping them to rehearse a situation that they're about to go into, or they're processing past experiences that really gave them a lot of struggle, and they're doing it in a way that feels really right to them and their body. So I love how you said that, how you phrased it.
What has been some of your favorite teams to collaborate with?
That's a great question. Child life and social work are always going to go hand in hand. I also work with the best medical director in the entire world, named Dr. Bree Eaton at Emory. She's my advocate and my support, and I could go to her for anything. A team that I just adore, no matter where I am, is the palliative care team, or the pediatric advanced care team is sometimes what they're called.
Yes.
They have taught me so much about being a clinician, providing support to families, about hope, about myself as an individual. They just are amazing. They're the team that if I couldn't work with any other team for the rest of my life, I would love to be a part of a palliative care team.
Do you know what? That is tied for me, palliative care and trauma services, which I know are very different flows. One is trying to calm and quiet your side effects of your medications or your disease, or guide you into end-of-life care. And the other is intense and exciting and chaotic. But I feel like the thread that they share in common is this like deep love to really walk alongside parents and families.
I see what you're saying though. Yes.
Those are such sacred spaces. If you could take a time machine and choose any other career, would you still have chosen child life?
This is a really tricky question you're bringing up.
It's kind of loaded.
It is loaded, because at different points in my career, I probably would have answered in different ways. Ironically, speaking about the palliative care team, I had received advice from a social worker on the palliative care team. And she said that if you are having this feeling inside of you, like, is this the right thing for me? Is this really what I want? Do I need to move on? Then go out and apply for a million different jobs and interview for those jobs and give it all that you have, and then see where you're at after that point. So there was a point in my career where I did that. I applied to logistics jobs, and I applied to fundraising jobs and nonprofits and all these different things. And ultimately, it came back to child life. So while it's a loaded question, no, I wouldn't leave child life. I think it is exactly where I'm supposed to be. Even if sometimes I try to fight it a little bit, I think it's my gift and I'm really grateful to be here. I wouldn't want to be anywhere else. We're so fortunate to be child life specialists.
I agree. And I think it's important to note that child life is ever evolving. So I started my own personal career in a inpatient PM&R, so specializing specifically in spinal cord injury, brain injury. Our kiddos and their families would come and stay at a minimum of 6 weeks, 6 to 8 weeks.
Wow.
It was unique individuals that we were working with. So I had that experience. Then moved into outpatient as a PRN, working in the emergency department, then covering more in a part-time role than a job share, then moving into Wonders and Worries, providing community-based support. And now I'm our national outreach coordinator, advocating for child life all across the country. So it just kind of goes to show where you start at the beginning of your career may not be where you are at the later part in your career. But you're right, the calling of child life is continuous throughout if you want it to be.
Mm-hmm.
If you are doing child life, you're stuck maybe, or it feels like maybe you are like not where you really want to be. Look for other experiences within the profession in a different setting. So maybe you're an outpatient and you want to try an inpatient unit, or maybe you want to try, you know, a community-based program, or working in a more specialized approach like hospice or palliative care. Go for it. Get that extra certification if you need it. Start your LLC and make your own private practice. Do it.
Yes, try it. Try it all. I agree. I think, too, you were talking about your career path and you've been in all these different areas and can always go back.
Yes.
Right? You can always go back. So just try it and take a leap. And sometimes the thing that scares you is actually what's best for you. And if you're not scared, maybe you waited a little too long. So use those skills are so transferable. Something that I noticed too is that child life specialists are some of the hardest working people. You work so hard to get into this career path, and then you work so hard while you're in the hospital to advocate for your services and for the developmental needs of children.
Yeah.
You have been working your butt off all along, and you go anywhere else and you're like, oh, okay, I can handle this. I got this. These skills make sense anywhere. So
I think what we really excel in more than anything else is play.
Mm-hmm.
How many people get to say that they get to play for a living? I mean, how lucky are we? And then secondly, in connection, like connection is part of child life. And we are trained at walking into a space, meeting people on their hardest day, and building a bridge of support that can be transferable, like you said, in so many different other things.
Absolutely.
Okay, I want to be honorable of your time. Is there anything else I failed to mention or anything else that you wanted to share to our listening population?
That's a good question. I think possibly the last thing would be that we talk a lot about the collaboration that needs to take place in the hospital, and we talk a lot about advocacy. And so I think working towards this mastery of explaining your services to other healthcare professionals can make such a big difference, and finding a way to do that in a way that doesn't ruffle feathers or isn't competitive, but just explaining these different aspects and these different interventions that you're doing with children because it's your expertise, I feel have helped me to become ingrained in these teams. I think about the ER, Julie. I also worked in the ER for a bit, and they want you there because they need you, and they need this procedure to go well, or a trauma has come through and they need you talking to the child, reassuring them and helping them to get to a calm place. They've got other things to do. So the healthcare team wants you there. Show them why you're necessary by explaining to them certain things that have happened, because I believe that the interdisciplinary team works best kind of like a symphony. We all have these different instruments that we play to make the overall music, and the music sounds best when we have all these instruments. So you only need to play your instrument, right? And you stay in your lane, and then it's this beautiful masterpiece for families because they're really getting all of their needs met, and each individual is functioning in their lane, and that's perfect and exactly what you should be doing.
Thank you for tuning into our podcast today. Please subscribe and continue to check back as our content is ever evolving. For questions or specific content-related requests, please send an email to podcast@wondersandworries.org.